We're going to make this fairly informal. Although it is a forum, we want your feedback. We're going to proceed sort of like we have before. We'll have a presentation that we hope will last about 45 minutes or so, and then the last hour at least we'll give over to your questions and your feedback. This is actually a part of this is a presentation that I did several weeks ago at Danville that took me an hour to get through. So I'm going to try to cut a bunch of stuff out, having added some things already. You're aware, I'm sure, that we're doing a hymnal. The foundation has edited Hymns for Worship, or produced it, rather, for the last 20 years, since I think 1986, and we're going to do another one. And if you can just advance there, Steve, I'm going to introduce the panel. This is kind of what we're going to do. I'm going to introduce the panel, then we're going to talk a little bit about the website and what we would like to get from you and from anybody else you can spread the word to. We want your feedback. I'm going to say a word about criteria for the hymnal, and then I'm going to do this mammoth history thing that I'm going to edit down to whatever needs to be done. David's going to talk primarily about the importance of phrasing so that we may sing with the understanding. We see this as very, very important in this new hymnal, or really any hymnal that's designed to help us worship God. And then probably in the question session, the questions we get a lot are about what we call acquisitions. What's going to be in and what's not? And the answer is, we don't know yet. We're not anywhere near to doing that. So Steve, let's just flip on through here. David Maravilla is one of the other panelists. David preaches in Republic, Missouri. His dad, Levy, known to some of you, was a longtime friend of Cecil Willis, former editor, and a number of other people. David is a board member of Symphonia, which is their board is for people who basically run the hymn writers school at Brother Stevens' singing school at Wilburton, Oklahoma. And I'm going to do it to you. He didn't know I'm going to do this. Go ahead, lay it and hit the next one there. David is in a band called Lonesome Road, which is an award-winning bluegrass band. And if you want to know how good he is, go to the next one. Notice, you go to their website. You need to log on here. David's website says that the personnel of his first band included Rhonda Vincent and later Alison Krauss. I should tell you, I asked Mike Willis the other day, talking about David, I said, do you know who Alison Krauss is? Mike said, no. Which explains why he's not at this meeting. He knew who Gordon Lightfoot was, I should probably say that, but the editor of our foundation is clueless about bluegrass. But David is not clueless. You need to log on and check it out. All right, let's go on. David is also on the board of directors of Symphonia, along with Mark Colson, Charlie Couchman, Craig Roberts. Some of you know Craig, who teaches at the University of Missouri. Charlie and Craig have also written a number of hymns, as has Jason Harden, who's on the panel as well. Let's just keep moving here. And you can see on the Symphonia website, or buy outside if you haven't already, the two CDs, which are here. So help yourself. They're also at the bookstore. These are worshipful, but musically and lyrically correct. Maybe I should reverse that. Lyrically and musically very well done hymns, in my estimation, written by Christians, many of whom have been through the hymn writers school, and it was that really first attracted me to them. When our board decided we wanted to do a hymnal, I said, I know the people we need to get to do this. And so I went out basically and recruited the Symphonia people to do this. So if you want to go to their website, go to the bookstore. They're very accomplished. Let me ask, how many of you have any of their CDs already? How many are familiar? A good many. So I don't need to say anything else to you. All right, Steve, let's go. Jason Harden, I introduced yesterday, just ripped through this. That's all in the book. But he has also written couple of hymns, one on each of the CDs, Triumphal Entry, and not High Above the Seraphim. What is it? Almighty God Beyond the Veil, yes. So if you're familiar with it, he's a very, very good hymn writer, marrying lyrics and music. All right, let's go on. Now, one of the things we want to get you to do, let me ask, how many have already done the hymn survey? Anybody? Oh, not very many.
Put your hand down, Steve.
Yeah, and you haven't either, I understand.
I am not up.
Yeah, so I'm preaching, but do as I say, not as I do. I have not finished my survey yet, but this, as far as we know, is a first for any hymnal anywhere. We're not aware of any other hymnal that has used the internet to, kind of down your alley from yesterday, to collect information and input from individuals. So if you go to the Truth website, click on the hymnal survey. Let's do the next one, Steve. You'll get something like this. We're going to ask you for some metadata. Are you a song leader? How long have you been leading? What size congregation? Because we feel like somebody who's led songs for 20 years in a church of 250 people probably might be weighted a little more than somebody who's 18 and going to lead his first song Wednesday night. No offense to any 18-year-olds. I know you're not 18, but said Jason talked about young people yesterday. That's the reason I'm ragging on him up here, right? Whatever. And I wanted number one. Zero is I'm not familiar with this hymn. That'll be important. If we get a lot of hymns that are just not familiar, I wanted number one to say this hymn should never have been written, but it now says do not include. And it goes on. The other board members fortunately prevailed upon me that collectively we have some good judgment. What we did was to take the eight hymnals most widely used among churches of Christ in the 20th century, going back to Jorgensen's Great Songs Number 2, which is the standard, the all-time best-selling hymnal among churches of Christ, which he did specifically to appeal even outside churches of Christ. Great Songs Revised that Abilene did in 86, the Gospel Advocate competitor to that, Christian Hymns Number 2, Songs of the Church Revised, both of them now out of print. And then R.J.'s Hymns for Worship Revised, the newer ones, John Wygant's Praise to the Lord, and the newer Howard one, which is, what is Songs of Faith and Praise. So we took the indices of all of these. There are about 1,820, is that right, David? I think something like that. So there are 1,800 hymns. We're going to shoot for something like 800 to 1,000. That's where the competition is right now. And so, obviously, half of these are not going in. And we want your feedback on which half to leave out, basically, is what that is. Obviously, there are 200 or 300 hymns that are going to be common to any hymnal you pick up, even the denominational world, whatever. I mean, Abide With Me, Amazing Grace, those are probably going to be in this hymnal. They're just part of the collective hymnody of any religious group. But we would like you, if you haven't done so, to go on, and David and I will pledge, those of us who have started but not finished, that we will finish our survey so that we can... that's about as far. I'm down. Actually, that's mine. I'm at the F's. That's where I am, David. So you may be ahead of me. I don't know. All right, Steve, let's rip through some of the rest of this. Quickly, what are the criteria? We want this hymnal to be scriptural. We want it to be singable. For all of our emphasis on lyrics, and that's where we want to place it, I mean, hymns are designed to be sung. And there are some hymns that are really not very singable, at least in my opinion. Now, we've had some disagreements already on the senior board of the five of us, and David may want to argue with me. But you know what, the kind of songs where, as one sister described it, when you get to the chorus, it's every man for himself. Or what we used to call the sniffin' song. You know, he bore it all, that, which could be made, actually, if you made that legato, that might work. I don't know, but we'll see. We want to use as much as possible original versions. We are not into mimicking Ellis Crumb's revisions of the lyrics of these songs. Now, some of them are plainly unscriptural. If we need to do that to rescue a hymn, we'll do it. But our idea is we would rather leave those decisions in the hands of local congregations or specific song leaders. If somebody doesn't want to lead because they think it's unscriptural, Jesus is Coming Soon, written right after Pearl Harbor. And I have some problems with that song. But I would rather it be in the hymnal for somebody who wants to lead it to be able to lead it than to unilaterally make the decision that nobody gets to lead this song because we don't like it. So that's the idea. We also, in another sense of original, we want to include some good new songs that have been written by not just the Hymn Writer School, Symphonia, but other people as well are writing, and we've assembled a review board to do that. All right, let's click on through here. What we're trying to do, in one sense, is to reverse a 150-year-old trend that goes back to Beecher's first hymnal that put the words in between the staff. I'll say more about this later, but in the 1850s, Beecher is the first one to do this, and nearly everybody else has done that. And what that's done is it's allowed the music to drive the words. even down to the way hymns are laid out on the page. It's the music and how much music you can get on the staff that basically drives that. We'd like to turn that around as much as possible and let the lyrics, the words, drive the song for reasons that we'll expand on a little bit later. All right, Steve, let's go here. What I just said. Next slide, okay? So, the senior editors are David and the other Symphonia people and myself from Truth Magazine. And then we've assembled what we're calling a review board that you will recognize some names of. Let's go to the next slide there. They include hymn writers like Don Alexander, Matt Basford, Mark Bingham, who teaches English at FC. Jonathan Ellis is here. Jonathan is a math and music double major graduate of Center College. Bill Hall, we're particularly interested in Bill and his, of course, Brother Sewell, who's knowledgeable about these old English hymns from which many of ours derive. Matt Harbor, who's from Nashville. Jason's here. Frank Himmel. Is Frank here? I know he's at the lectures because he spoke. May not be here in the audience. Next one, please. Carl Main from FC. Steve Smith, who from Indianapolis led singing here last year. And a lot of these names, you know, Bob Walter and Wayne Walker has written a lot about hymn histories. Whittlesey's from the Geyer family, two generations of them. The younger ones have done the one voice. Charles Willis. Is Charles here? No? Whatever.
Glenn Meyer,
okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Excuse me for omitting. I was trying to edit, actually. All right. Let me just, this is part of the big behemoth presentation. I'm going to try to whip through very quickly. What do we know about New Testament music? This standard kind of sermon. Go, 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 go. Just go. It's vocal. Many texts testify. New Testament Christians sang. We know that because that's what it said. Next slide. We put this up. It was non-instrumental. What texts show or say Jesus or the apostles used instruments, ever taught anybody else to do it, did it themselves, what churches ever used it, what New Testament epistles give instructions for doing it, it just isn't there. So that we get this sort of traditional slide out of my instrumental music lesson where you line up the passages and you can find evidence all over the New Testament about singing. I don't read anything about playing except in those rather obscure figurative passages in the book of Revelation. So we got that. But what else do we know? I don't need to preach that lesson. Well, we know not only that. Let's go on a little bit further. What do we know about music style? As far as I can tell, nothing. Now, music historians will say, well, they chanted or they sang in unison. Or, well, I'm not sure that we actually know that. I mean, as a historian, some of that evidence is pretty challengeable. And from a New Testament standpoint, it's pretty evident God gave detailed instructions for a lot of things that we do in worship. But as far as I can tell, he said nothing about music style, about whether we're to sing in harmony, whether we're to chant, whether we're to sing in unison or whatever. In other words, to put it that way, let's go to the next one. What we know about it is that the emphasis is on the lyrics. We know nothing about the music. But we have at least in passage like 1 Timothy 3, Philippians 2, there are other texts. I want to use one, okay? Let's go to the next one. If you look at 1 Timothy 3, these seem to be the embedded lyrics of a hymn. Known to New Testament Christians, revealed in the flesh, vindicated in the spirit, beheld by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up in glory. If you have a New American Standard Version, you will see that actually stacked up poetically, like it is a poem, which in fact it is. But, let's look at it another way. It looks like poetry, it's stacked up, like I say, in six neat stanzas. It doesn't rhyme, but of course they weren't into rhyming. They're into thought parallelism. Is what they're after. And of course, a lot of modern poetry does that as well. But it doesn't rhyme. Let's go on. The thought parallels are not immediately obvious, maybe. But let's try another arrangement. Next slide. And connect the dots. Put it this way. That's actually the original way it is. But if you matched the first, the fourth, and the fifth, the second, the third, and the sixth, next slide, you would get something like this. In fact, if you wrote it out with coupleted stanzas, he who was revealed in the flesh, vindicated in the spirit, beheld by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up in glory. And you do an acrostic with that. In other words, match the thought rhymes. You have what happens on earth as opposed to what happens in heaven. You have a comparison of flesh and spirit so that he who was revealed in the flesh was proclaimed among the nations and believed on in the world. But he was also vindicated in the spirit, beheld by angels, and taken up in glory. Now, that's what we know, or at least a part of what we know. We have some lyrics of various hymns, and what they match is not the rhyme. We don't know much about the music, if anything. We have this thought parallelism. David's going to talk more about this, so I'm going to skip on to something else. Steve, if we can go next. That's just an example of how that would look otherwise. So, let's just keep right on trucking here. I'm going to edit that out. I'd love to tell you all about these guys and restoration figures and their hymnals and so forth. Let's keep moving here. Jehovah to Jah, you like that, do you? Yeah, that's a pretty good history of American music. Let's keep on moving here. Oh, stop right there. The yellow on there is Campbell's interested in words only. These old Scottish and English psalters, that's exactly what they were. I've got an example of one later. There's no music in them until the 1850s. You would take a hit. Everybody knew the tune, so you'd have a hymn and tune book. And you could take the tune Africa or the tune Wellesley or whatever tune it was that you knew, and anything that was written in the meter, common meter, long meter, 8-8 or 8-8-6-8, whatever meter it was, 7-7-7, the number of syllables basically in each line, you could match that to any song written in that particular meter. Campbell liked that, and that has a lot to do with the kind of singing that was done among Restoration, quote, churches in the 19th century. Now, competing with this was a whole genre of music that came to be known as Sacred Harp, Southern Harmony, Kentucky Harmony, the Fa Sol La. So anybody ever done Fa Sol La? Anybody know? All right, forget it. Go on. One person, Jay Horsley, knows about that. Now, what I've been doing for the last 6 months or so is digging into some of these hymnal collections. Let me just give you an idea of the scope of this. 1,800 out of 8 hymnals among Churches of Christ. The biggest collection of hymnals in the world is the Library of Congress. I was there in January. They've got 16,500 hymnals. The second largest collection is at Emory University in Atlanta, of which I'm an alum. My daughter lives there. I spent some time there. Actually, John Weaver is a member at Embry Hills, is one of the librarians there. They've got about 15,000 hymnals. And then the third largest is at Princeton at 12,000. The fourth largest collection of hymnals in the United States of America is at my own institution, the University of Kentucky. So I've wangled a faculty carol and direct access to the collection, about half of which is uncataloged. They've just bought a new collection, and that's put them over the 10,000 mark. So I've been spending Fridays most of the last several months rifling through unsorted boxes of old hymnals, looking for good hymns that didn't make the jump to others, hymns that we've forgotten about, hymns that were used by denominations, for example. Anybody know the hymn, There's a Wideness in God's Mercy, written by Frederick Faber? Anybody familiar with it? He's a Catholic. He wrote Faith of Our Fathers is the most famous hymn that he wrote. There's a Wideness in God's Mercy has 13 stanzas. Most of them have Catholic references. They are unsingable scripturally as far as I'm concerned, except for four that are commonly called the Protestant verses. I think it's a wonderful hymn. At least those four stanzas are wonderful. The others I don't care too much for, personally. But I think that ought to be considered for that. But the point is, there is just the amount of hymnological material out there is absolutely stunning. Let's go on there. Two or three others that I've happened to hit. Southern Baptist has the biggest collection of Baptist hymnals, and I've looked at some close by, some Methodist and Presbyterian as well. All right, let's circulate through. If you're interested in this, the best collection of Restoration, quote-unquote, hymnals is on the Lincoln Christian College Library website. A fellow there by the name of Enos Dowling, now deceased, spent his entire lifetime accumulating hymnals, and that's a fantastic website for all kinds of information, but I'm going to whip through a bunch of this. I am now at 22 minutes, so I'm already a little bit over time, David, but I'm going to get there quick. Let's just cycle. I want to get... this is back up one if you can, Steve. That's just the title page out of Psalms, Hymns, and Spiritual Songs. Is that classified, David? I'm sorry? No, I mean the name of the hymn. Okay, never mind. But that's basically what this is. Anybody ever seen Campbell's hymnal? Or a copy? I went through about 6 or 8 editions. It's words only. And again, I've got an example in here. Steve, let's cycle through a couple more of these. This is just the timeline is some things that are happening. Campbell is publishing this book. He's getting some competition from people like A.S. Haydon, later the Fillmore brothers, who are into the Fa Sol La, the note singing. But Campbell's influence is so great that for most churches, the Sacred Melodeon, which is A.S. Haydon's book that wrote a number of other things, was president of Hiram College at one point. But eventually, after Campbell dies, this kind of thing takes off, what we would consider more as a standard hymnal. Steve, let's go on. And I'm getting close to the end of this, David, believe it or not. Let me back up one, David, if you can. Or Steve, I'm sorry. In the 1860s, Campbell dies in 1866. The American Christian Missionary Society holds the copyright to it. And almost as soon as Campbell dies, they put out an edition of Psalms, Hymns, and Spiritual Songs that has the music in it, not just the words. And then we're off to the races because Fillmore and O'Kane and Noel Shaw, and just cycle through a few more of these, all of these people start publishing hymnals so that you get dozens of them, hundreds of them. Now, I mentioned Henry Ward Beecher, who in 1855 published this hymnal known as the Plymouth Hymnal or the Plymouth Collection at, he was at Plymouth, Massachusetts, in which he combined words and music on the same page. I think, Steve, the next one probably has a, down at the bottom, a kind of a picture. It's just, in other words, it looks like what we would consider a normal hymnal. But this is a revolution in terms of congregational singing. Now, these other Faso Law books, they're not specifically hymns. They have hymns in them, but they have drinking songs, political songs, they have anti-drinking temperance songs. They're just all over the map. This is specifically religious. And what Beecher does is to make it possible for churches to be, as he put it, singing churches. To have everyone, not just the choir, but to have everybody singing. So that's a landmark, but in some ways it's good. In other ways, it starts to put the emphasis on the music. All right, Steve, let's go. See if we can get to the end of this puppy here. That's just an example of some of the other hymnals that are put out. I wish I had time to tell you, but I don't. I'm looking for, when we get and keep coming, and we're going to get to Sewell's, the first Gospel Advocate hymnal here, which should be next, maybe. No, that's the Drunkard's Home. Back up a minute. Not the Drunkard's Home, right there. There is Steve Marini at Wellesley College has assembled the American Protestant Hymns Database, an electronic database, as a matter of fact, of more than 100,000 hymns. And it's a work in progress, which you can ID by title, first line, and page number. In terms of those not produced by independent trans-denominational groups, he counts 48 specifically Baptist hymnals, 43 Methodist, Holiness, Pentecostal, 28, what he calls Restorationist, Christian Church, Disciples, Churches of Christ, 16, and so forth. All right, Steve, hit the next one here. You get Flavel Hall, S.H. Hall, F.L. Rao, some in the Sewell and Bill Hall family tree who begin to publish hymnals. And I don't know why more of the Hall songs didn't make it into the Gospel Advocate hymnal. I expect maybe there was some doctrinal infighting, maybe, but I can't prove that. Come on, one or two more, Steve. Christian Hymns, published by E.G. Sewell, published by the Gospel Advocate Company in 1890. Now, this is one of the first Gospel Advocate songbooks, and, I mean, this is 25 years after Campbell is dead, but look, come on up and notice the pages. I mean, this is strictly lyrics. So that if you're singing out of the Gospel Advocate hymnal in 1890 or beyond, you don't have music. And the song leader would get up and say, all right, 142, my soul be on thy guard, short meter. And so you'd pick, David, you know a short meter tune? Is Wellesley short meter? I don't know. But you'd pick something like that, Africa's long meter. So you could sing Soldiers of Christ Arise, maybe, to that. But you could match those lyrics to any hymn, to any tune, rather, that was known to your audience. Now, obviously, if the audience doesn't know the tune, if they haven't been through these singing schools and they began to die out in the late 19th century, you got problems because everybody can chant the words, but you can't sing them. So, let's go on. The next major development as far as hymnody is Elmer Leon Jorgensen, who lived at Louisville most of his life, was on the board of the premillennial paper, Word and Work, but also published, come next, please, Great Songs of the Church. And serendipitously, what happened was, if you know, Alexander and Excel were the two big hymn writers of the 19th century. They were kind of the George Beverly Shea of these 19th century revivalists. And they were bitter enemies, that you could not use an Excel copyrighted song or song he held the rights to, and it couldn't be in the same book with Alexander. Well, about the time that they buried the hatchet in 1920, Jorgensen is coming out with Great Songs, so he's really the first hymnal in or outside of Churches of Christ to use both of these collections. And He did it in both round note and shape note editions. He published it with Rand McNally, a secular publisher, specifically to get it out beyond Churches of Christ. Now the skinny on it was it's supposed to be premillennial, but I challenge anybody to find any more songs in Great Songs of the Church that are premillennial that are in any other hymnal. There are some you could slant that way, but I don't buy this idea that he was trying to push premillennialism. By 1960, he estimated that this songbook, and it's actually based on sales figures, were used by 3 million Christians in 10,000 churches. Left it to Abilene when he died. Let's cycle on through, and I will quit droning here in a minute. All right, in fact, I'm going to shut up. David, come and tell us about why phrasing is so important in hymns, and then we'll go to questions. 28 minutes.
Yeah.
I told you less than 30.
I have too much stuff too, so we're going to cycle through this. And if you have questions about this, please let us know. We're going to try to demonstrate one of thing that's going to make this hymnal different and really revolutionary since the 1850s when we started putting the words inside the music. To this day, to the British, having the words all inside the music is still an American thing. And they, for good reasons, have a reputation of being more literary than we are. They understand something about phrasing that a lot of musicians, including people who are editors of hymn books, don't even begin to understand. Now, go ahead and turn to the scripture. We know, and just forget that this is a hymn that we sing from the Old King James Version word for word. But in the Old King James Version, you remember how every verse is its own paragraph. That they made no attempt to designate what was poetry by you know, narrowing or widening the margins or insetting it in any kind of way. The Old King James didn't do that. Go ahead. And so the thing that determined was just the width of the column. Some King James versions look like that. Some look like the previous, but go ahead. But in the New King James Version, it looks like that. And what we should be able to see right away is that makes more sense like that because of the way it's laid out on the page than it is when it's just every verse is a paragraph or if it's just written in paragraph form. In any kind of writing, even writing that's not poetry, indenting for paragraphs, that is a form of just making things make more sense the way they appear on the page. And so when you see this, you see that these first lines are all parallel. The law of the Lord, testimony, statutes, commandments. The second lines are all parallel. This converts the soul. It makes wise the simple. It rejoices the heart. When the thing that determines where those lines break is just the width of the column, it's not as easy to see the logic in there. In fact, the thing that defines poetry in the Bible is not that God said, you know, this is all poetry and this is not poetry. It's the logic in it. As Steve said, it's the parallelism in the thoughts. And so when translators see that in something is that logical and has that much structure, they realize that's not just normal writing, that's poetry. And so in newer translations of the Bible, they have attempted to show the logic in it by the way it's laid out on the page. All right, go ahead. That's how the New American Standard Bible does it, and that's how the New International Bible does it. Just get all those up on the page. And then, okay, that's what it is. And you see how those are all parallel. This of the Lord does this, and it converts the soul. Go ahead. Keep going. That, when it's laid out like that, that's how we had it up there at first. It's not as easy to see. Does everybody see that? I mean, is that clear? Okay, go ahead, Steve. There are other examples of poetry. You see, and we know we should know this from looking at the Psalms, that these lines have something to do with each other. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. Day unto day utter speech, night to night reveals knowledge. Even in the New Testament, hit one more. Things like, though it's not set off in poetry, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. That's like poetry. Now, it's just the same kind of parallelism. Keep going. Now, here's a psalm that we all know in a paragraph, the first three verses. And we could probably quote that. But if we go ahead, hit it. When it's like this, it's just more clear. Now, it's not that we could lay it out in our Bibles just like that. Go ahead and hit it again. But if we could use bullets, back up one. See, it's the Lord is my shepherd. I don't need anything. Well, why? Well, because. Point one, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths. It's like an outline. You know, preachers looking for sermons. The psalm, that's all outlined right there. If we could just explain to people how that should be laid out on the page, the outline is clear. Go next. I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, but I don't fear. Why? You are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me. You anoint my head with oil. It's just like the main point and then the sub points. Now, the point of this is, with the bullets and everything, is to make it obvious that how the same words appear on a page makes a big difference in how easy it is to understand. All right, if it's just up there in a paragraph, it's not that those thoughts are completely elusive, but the logic and the beauty of the poetry is not obvious. Just putting spaces and indenting things, and in this case bullets, can make all that obvious. Go ahead. Here's the one that Steve talked about. Go ahead. It's really just like that. Let's move on. You know, these cool passages in the New Testament that, I don't know, they're not set off like poetry in our Bibles. But the reason we like to read these passages is because they're so poetic. And when they're laid out on the page like this, you can see it. Whom he foreknew, he predestined. It just, one thought flows right into another. Go ahead. Later in that passage, you know, this sounds so cool when we read it. We don't even realize why. It's because it's so logical. And it's the way the thoughts are connected. Who can be against us? Who is he who condemns? Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, shall distress, shall persecution? Go ahead. Here's another one. Another passage that we think is just beautiful when we read it. There's a reason. Look at how each statement, and though this, and though that, and though I have all this stuff, but if I don't have love, I am nothing. That passage continues. Love does what? All those things. It's in that passage. Go ahead. It bears all things, believes all things. Even, you know, there's clearly a connection between those lines. Next. Love never fails, but whether there are prophecies, they will fail. Tongues will cease. Knowledge will vanish away. That's why that is such a good, people like to hear that even read. Because there's a logic built into that writing. That when it's just in a paragraph, we may not even see. But when you lay it out like that, it's easier. Go ahead. All right. The same thing applies to hymns. Go ahead. Two clicks. All right. There's Be With Me, Lord, the first verse in a paragraph. Now, click it again. There it is, the same words laid out in a logical way. Be with me, Lord, because I can't do all this stuff. I cannot live without you. I dare not try to take one step alone. I cannot bear the loads of life unaided. I need thy strength to lean myself upon. That's not apparent. It's not as apparent if the lines don't break in the right place. Next. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. The knowledge about Jesus now is like a foretaste of the glory to come. Well, what am I now? Heir of salvation, purchase of God, born of His Spirit, washed in His blood. You see? Go ahead. Next. Angels bring from above echoes of mercy, whispers of love. Next. Watching and waiting, looking above, filled with His goodness, lost in His love. Those are great phrases. But it's also the thought that they're connected. Next. When it's written like this in a Baptist hymnal, see, and this is typically the way hymnals have, as Steve said, since music entered. The thing is, how many notes you can fit across the column, across the page, is what determines how many words fit across the page. The music has been driving how the words have been laid out on the page. And And if the words are what teach and admonish, and of course they are, if the words are what does the edifying, then the words should get the nod when it comes to how things are laid out. So there it is. And you see, what you have with poetry, you've got capitals out in the middle of lines sometimes. Well, it's not as clear in the first one, but like in the second verse, visions is capitalized. Because if it were written as a hymn or a poem, the visions would be on its, it would start a new line. And so, you know, you type that stuff into Microsoft Word and it goes nuts. Because it's just a big mess. And there's a reason for that. You know, the capital should be at the beginning of lines. Go ahead next. There's the way it is in Sacred Selections. And notice in the last verse, filled with his. I had to make that a smaller font to squeeze it, just like Sacred Selections does. Have you noticed? They just squeeze it. Yeah, not. But anyway, yeah, they really cram it in there. But go ahead next. Here's how it is. Christian's Hymns number 3, Hymns for Worship. It's like that. They're all breaking in a different place, but it's determined by the page width. And how many notes they tried to fit, and font size and things like that. Next, look at that. I mean, what makes more sense? You can, the capitals just happen to end up in the right place. Punctuation, when needed, is right at the end of the lines and in the middle if needed there. I mean, that just makes more sense. It's easier to see not only the beauty of the writing, but the thoughts. We think in phrases. We don't, you know, if it's blessed assurance, Jesus is mine, oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. It's harder to think. And of course, what we need in worship are hymns and other content in everything we do that makes us think, where we don't have to stump. The easier it is to see the meaning in it, the better we can worship. Go ahead next. Just keep. Yeah. Now, we saw thee not, but we believe. That's easy to see. Hit it two more times. And we know not why God's wondrous grace, but I know whom I have believed. We can. Sometimes the structure of hymns is so obvious that it doesn't matter how they're laid out. Now, with the hymn, Jesus I Come, what is the main idea of that? Can I ask questions up here? Out of my bondage and sorrow and night, and then what? Where does it go from there? Into other stuff. And that's the whole thing. Out of this and into that. Hit it once. So it begins, out of my bondage, sorrow, and night. Jesus I come, Jesus I come. What's the opposite of bondage? What's the opposite of sorrow? Okay. Night. What's the next line? Now, when that's laid out like that, we can see things that we've never seen before. Do you see? We probably got the out in the end, but look at that. And that stuff like that is so logical, it's like the Psalms. Even if you don't realize why it's so logical, it is easy to worship with that. But if it's just laid out in some paragraph, you know, and just breaking depending on how wide the margins are and how the column fits in there, it's not as easy to see that. All right, next. Here's another one, just a great piece of writing, these two verses from this, and that's how it's laid out in Hymns for Worship. Go ahead, next. That's how it's laid out in Sacred Selections. And hit it once. What that hymn is saying in these verses is that in each one of those situations, and go ahead and click all these through, the love of Jesus is all these things to us. Okay? Now, how would you write that? Click it again. That's how you would write it, and that's how you would put it on the page. A joy by day, a peace by night, and storms a calm, and darkness light, and pain a balm, and weakness might, is the wonderful love of Jesus. Nobody has trouble understanding that or following that. And it's just, not only is it prettier, it makes more sense like that. Go ahead, next. Here is an example of a psalm, two verses from a psalm that is laid out like it should be. Next, here is a paraphrase of a psalm that is in some hymnals, sometimes with music, sometimes without. And that's how it is laid out like it should be. And notice how each line of that psalm, some of these paraphrases, they're better than, we don't realize how close they are to the scriptures. Look, the real psalm says, the earth is the Lord's and its full, and all its fullness. Then this says, the earth and the riches with which it is stored. Second line, the world and those who dwell therein, the world and its dwellers belong to the Lord. It's pretty close to every line. It's not just these four lines reflect what these four lines said, but it breaks down in. This line basically says what the first line of the psalm says. Do you see that? Next. The same thing with this. Hit it again. Here's the real psalm. Who may ascend to the hill of the Lord? And the paraphrase, oh, who shall the mount of Jehovah ascend? And just look at that. We don't have time to study that right now, but they are close. Hit it again. The way it's laid out in a hymnal, however, even a hymnal which didn't have any music, is like this. The earth and the riches with which it is stored, the world and its dwellers belong to the Lord. And when that's in a hymnal without the music, it's also hard to sing like that. Because what was the tune to that? The earth and the riches with which it is stored should break right there. It should break because of the music. It should break because that's the logical thought. That's the logical place for the thought to break. The world and its dwellers belong to the Lord. But that's the way it's laid out. I'm not trying to pick on anybody's hymnal. But people I know, well, before they revised a hymnal, had a lot of these in there. And they couldn't figure out why people couldn't sing them and didn't sing them. And it's an example of how people who are as concerned about God as anybody else and who are great musicians do not understand the first thing about how to put words on a page where they make sense. And it's, I don't know why it evolved into this, but that's the way it is. Usually you have musicians only who are in charge of hymnals. Not people that really write, not really English people, but just music people. And then you end up with the music driving the words. However wide of a page you have, how many notes you can squeeze in there, then we'll just put the words in later. The thing, I think we're finished. I think I'm pretty impressed with how fast. I'm sorry. Here is the paraphrase from the hymnal as it appears in the hymnal. And here's how the psalm would look, the words from the Bible, if they weren't phrased right. And that just doesn't look as good. Is there another one? Okay, that just doesn't look as good as what we saw before. But it's not just a matter of looks. It's a matter of phrases. And this phrase means is a thought, and it's connected with this phrase. And then this phrase is connected with the next phrase. And well-written hymns are like that. And our goal is to phrase things correctly. We're going to run into some actual spacing difficulties, but this is really revolutionary to have, and it shouldn't be. I mean, how obvious should it be to us who just hammer on, you know, it's not the music, it's the word. We have to think when we worship. Our minds can't be wandering. We have to concentrate on what we're singing. How obvious should it be to us that the word should get the nod as far as significance over the music, even in the way the hymnal looks? And so that's what we want to try to do. All right, and we'll.
Can you put up